This is Guy Bogart with odds and ends about our cats. Remember some months ago I advised against washing cats except in emergencies with plenty of support from others? I published the same in a cat's magazine, and a southern cat fancier wrote an article saying that it is a must to wash them. She has 37, which from early life have grown used to it. Oh, well, if you wish, most of us will stick to our guns that the cleanest of pets is better off as nature prescribed. But if you're going to wash them, don't use the technique that this fancier in question. She sits them in a 3-gallon bucket, soaps them, and then rinses them. Then she washes her heads. No doubt her cats have been trained from early months to do that. But if you insist on washing your cat, follow the advice of Dr. Ida M. Mellon and begin at the head and wash from there down. Be very sure not to use any strong soaps and dry thoroughly. Milo G. Denninger, in the complete book of the cat, writes, quote, "Never bathe a cat unless positively obliged to. If by accident puss has tumbled into anything which has badly soiled the hair, such as paint or, as often happens, has become entangled with a sticky flypaper, then, of course, a washing is a necessary and should be done immediately. To remove paint or sticky flypaper, I have found nothing to answer the purpose so well as warm water with naphthalene soap, using a little turpentine on a rag at first to the very bad patches. If the soap alone will not remove all, then put a little soda in the water. Rinse well after washing and dry with rough bath towels. In winter, place in a warm room until thoroughly dry. It is a dangerous practice to wash a cat constantly, for sooner or later, it is sure to contract a bad cold or pneumonia. The best way to cleanse a cat's coat is by dry cleaning. First, comb all knots out of the fur with a wire comb. And if the hair is very much soiled or greasy, rub with a little rough towel moistened with alcohol and water, half and half. Rub nearly dry. Then take a flour dredger filled with dry cornstarch and dust the cat over lightly, rubbing the starch in around the nose and eyes with the fingers to prevent any getting into the eyes or nose. After rubbing well into the coat with the hands, brush and comb thoroughly, and if all the hair does not become fluffy, repeat the process where necessary. Dry cleaning does not spoil the coat, whereas a cat which is constantly washed never grows a good coat, as the soap and water remove all the natural oil, and the hair becomes brittle, breaks off, and also turns a rusty color. A cat frequently washed becomes dirty much sooner than one which is dry cleaned, as they will not clean themselves when constantly washed." Unquote. Incidentally, in a very large cat library, one of the largest in Southern California, I have yet to find one single authority who doesn't agree with our hypothesis that a cat should never be washed except in emergency. But now we can drop the subject of washing. I am not an authority, but I have seen nothing but this one magazine article which contradicted the other authorities. But if you wanted to go ahead, why, do as you like, only be careful. We're pretty well away from the old idea of nine lives and that the cat can stand anything. It has one life, and while having the usual animal tenacity to live, it is in many ways quite delicate. Cats do not always light on their feet, as folks who neglect to screen windows are constantly finding out. By preventive spots, we are doing much to prevent enteritis, but the cat is susceptible to colds and pneumonia. How many are ruptured by being carelessly picked up by their front legs? And not always by young children, either. I once saw a woman, before she could be stopped, rupture two puppies by so lifting them. No, while a fur baby is, as St. George Mivart points out, best adapted for its mode of life of all the mammals, it is still a little creature that needs considerate handling in cleaning non-washing. The above book, like The Complete Siamese Cat, may be secured from the publishers, Denlinger's, at 1627 Pope Avenue, Richmond, Virginia. The latter was reviewed last year by this program. The matter here used is copyrighted, used by permission. The Milo G. Denlinger books are well illustrated and give much information. Birth and death are equally natural parts of life, just as nodal cycles in an unending experience. But the race has so long associated the festivities of birth that we forget or fail to realize that death is also the beginning of another phase of life. So we will feel the sorrow of separation with the passing of each of our little per-baby pals. We have all of us shed tears at the parting, and that is natural and normal and helpful. But there are so many other cats awaiting our love, so we soften the grief to a nostalgic memory. Lynn Hamilton, a few years ago, in one of the many poems she has written of her first love, the cat, tells of a red Persian 2 months old which went home. For Leo, it is done, it is finished. The long hours of waiting or hoping are over, and now he lies beneath the 4 o'clocks under my window, hid forever from dancing sunlight and the warm south winds. The tall grasses where he chased butterflies are lonely and still. I listen, listen, longing to hear his eager feet racing across the floor, his gentle call at my door. I listen, knowing my little golden line will come no more. Thank you, Lynn Hamilton. Mrs. Ida B. Hall of Hollywood is a member of our cat's family we are always glad to hear from. Mrs. Hall, by the way, is totally blind, but has learned to write by the touch system on her typewriter and carries on a most interesting conversation on cats. And although I have two fair eyes, my typewriter doesn't spell as well as hers does. Well, in a recent letter, she gives this note and poem, quote, "Many years ago, when my sister and I lived in Fort Worth, Texas, we had a dear little white kitten. We just called it Baby. The little thing was so loving and intelligent that we loved it very much. One day, the kitten wandered outside the house and got into the incinerator with the soot. Then he wandered back through the dew, came into the house, and jumped right onto a new book I had just opened. It made tracks that would not come off. Of course, we told him what a naughty thing he had done, but petted and caressed him. Not long after that, the little thing took sick with that dreadful cat disease and died. After we moved to California, we were arranging books on a shelf. Down fell that old book and flew open, revealing those little footprints the kitten had made so long ago. We both looked at them sadly and talked about how we had loved him. This is the little poem I wrote about him. Little white kitten, little white kitten of long ago, did you ever know I loved you so? You jumped upon my brand new book to take a little impish look and left your dusty footprints there. Then you leaped upon my lap to take a little cozy nap, unmindful of those little prints that marred my book with shady tints as you purred upon my knee. No one knows how much I cried when I learned that you had died. I placed you in a velvet box and buried you beneath the phlox on a balmy autumn day. Little white kitten that used to be, those naughty tracks still smile at me over the years now past and gone as I sit here all alone without my little pal. Many a year has passed away since that time you chanced to play upon this leaf, now dim with age, leaving footprints on the page and your memory in my heart. Mrs. Ida B. Hall." Few American cat lovers and lovers of all animals have done more good than Mr. and Mrs. Truman Pearson of Minneapolis. Dr. Ida M. Mellon sent me a few months ago the first number of a little magazine, American Cats, published in that city. In it is a poem by Mrs. Pearson after the death of the family cat, 4.5 years old, buried on Christmas Day. From this little magazine of February 1943, we quote, "Baby Snooks, loving hands have made for you a resting place, my sweet, beneath the golden glow bush, a quiet, safe retreat. Oh, how we miss you, baby Snooks. Our hearts are sad and lonely. We miss your cunning little ways, your silken coat, your amber eyes, made bright our darkest days. Oh, how we miss you, baby Snooks. Sometimes you were jealous of your sister. You really had good cause, for Daddy called you second fiddle, dear little velvet paws. Today you sleep beneath the snow, and Mother Earth is cold, but soon the summer sun and all her glories will unfold. Sleep on, my sweet, beneath the golden glow." Mrs. Truman Pearson. The Pearsons all the year feed the birds, squirrels, and other visitors, for all life forms are brothers and sisters, and receive a lasting love from this marvelous Minneapolis family. Yes, we cherish truly these fur fairies who share our love. No life ever ends, and our unlost cats still live in reality and also in our hearts and memories. After storms, there's always sunshine and blue sky, and when we come to new life, we shall be conscious also of the joy of death, which is also life. It is something to look forward to as a glorious adventure. I once put it this way, "Sweet smile of death, this is my beautiful hour here at the moment of death. Retrospect, prospect. We sleep who have wearied through joyous days of service. Long are the years, memories, friendships their cargo. No regrets mark the way. Worn the body, keen the mind. I am eternal. Hail to death, sweet interlude at the portal." And that's the way I look at life, folks. I hope I can live a long, long time and be full of service during all that period. But when the time comes that I leave this physical world, I know that I'm going on over and keep right on working and serving, and that I'm going to meet there these little pets that have gone on ahead of me. The American magazine, in its department, the law, calls attention to the fact that abandoning of any cat for any reason is prohibited in Springfield, Illinois. New York State has such a law, but did you know there is no such statute in California? Most everyone I ever talked with took for granted we had such a law, but the contact over the marauding cat bill in 1953 brought to light that we do not. We hope to have that taken care of in the 1955 legislature. Opposition to abandoning cats seems the only point on which Gertrude Charney and her so-called friends of the birds and cat lovers are in agreement. We'll have to call on her to support our bill in 55. By the way, in 55, we have on pretty good underground from the camp of the Friends of the Birds that they're going to introduce in Sacramento another bill to compel all cats to be licensed and to be on leashes when outside their yard. Well, this is Guy Bogart with love and joy to you folks listening in, and to all the forms of life within your pleasant homes. Happy purrs.